Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the ACO PeteCast podcast series. It is not necessarily chilly, but we are starting fall. Kids are back in school. Footballs are in the air. It is September, and Scott, we are celebrating our 50th episode of the ACO PeteCast podcast. Can you believe it?
Who'd have thunk it?
We've had some ups and downs, some that have been listened to by four people and some that have been listened to by a few more. But, you know, we are still here and it's been a journey. And I am very happy to have been going on this with you and glad that you're sticking around for a while. And you may know our special guest a bit more than I do since he did journey down to Tulsa and Oklahoma State.
Go Pokes!
We talked about at the beginning of this year that we were going to be pulling out some big guns for our guests on the Peds cast. And I think we have done that today. So just to give you a little bit of tips about our special guest, he is currently an emergency medicine doctor. You are currently emergency medicine doctor in Houston, Texas, where you are currently living. You did your training at Oklahoma State and University of Texas in San Antonio. I'm saying this like you don't know it. This is your life. Some of you may know our guest. You may be one of his over 18,000 followers on Instagram, or you may have seen him as a political and health consultant on MSNBC, CNN, BBC, just to name a few. As you can tell, our special guest has a very strong background in health policy, where he has worked in the federal government for part of the Obama administration, amongst many other medical organizations. He has a passion for social media advocacy, for health advocacy. You've probably seen him present some things at DOD on the Hill, or on his television show, which I learned about as I was reading the bio, called STEM City, Encouraging Careers in Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. I don't know how he agreed to come on to our show. Please welcome Dr. Durrani, emergency medicine physician from the University of Texas. We'll go with that. Houston, welcome to the podcast, Dr. Durrani.
Thanks for having me. Can I take you everywhere with me and you can kind of give that intro before I go into a patient room or anything like that?
I'd be happy to be your hype man.
Boys and girls, it's Dr. Durrani.
No, I'm super excited to be here, super honored to have been asked. I've known Dr. Cyrus for a long, long time. I've looked up to him ever since I was a baby first year at Oklahoma State, still look up to him, and I'm honored to have been asked and have this conversation.
And now he's going to ask you to be with him every time that he's talking to a patient to know that someone looks up to him.
That's so true. That's so true. But yeah, it is a great pleasure. We are proud of you. We are cowboy proud, as they say. And even though you've gone to the Texas side of the border, it is great to have you on the podcast. You have had some experiences early in your career that have just been phenomenal. And there's just, you know, tonight's a great time to shine and to tell people what is possible in their lives as they grow up in this osteopathic profession. So it's really, really good. I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about your experience with the Obama administration. That is really something that, you know, took off early in your career, and you know it's kind of like being at the right time, at the right place at the right time. So tell us more about what went on with your Obama experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So I ever since I was a kid, I would watch the 5:30 evening news with my parents. Like, that was like a ritual. We would sit down for dinner, watch the news, and obviously that news is usually very, you know, policy and politics focused. And so I, compared to like my other peers who were in fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, knew all these weird things that were happening in DC. And I was like that policy nerd kid, political nerd kid. And so when I went to college, I obviously was attracted towards medicine and sciences and decided to major in biology, but I realized I could double major and still get out of there in 4 years. And so I added poli-sci as a double major. And so that was amazing, being in college in Austin, the capital, and being able to, you know, do some internships and things at the state capital. And then I decided to take a gap year and, you know, take my MCAT, apply to med school. And so with the gap year, I was like, okay, what am I going to do with that? Obviously, I'm applying to med school, doing all those things. But I was like, hey, let me apply to some internships and things in DC. And I had like 0% chance in my mind of getting it, but I got a White House internship, and it was crazy. Everyone I was there with was, either going to law school or in law school, or maybe was doing something in business, and I was probably the only medical person there. And it was the coolest experience ever, right? Like, you with a poli sci degree, that's, your dream. That's like the Disneyland of like going to the White House gates every single day and literally like walking past the tourists and going to work there. And it was fun. And I was in the Office of Presidential Correspondence. And so that office, basically all the mail the president gets, it gets sorted. So you kind of do the sorting part and then you look through the letters. And back then the president would get 10 letters a day. And so you would like submit these letters for being in the 10 letters a day. And then the president would write back to each one of those people. But the cool thing was through that office, a lot of those letters at that time with the implementation of ACA were healthcare related letters. And people were writing about, hey, we would like to, expand coverage in our state, or, thanking the president for something. We're saying that, hey, this isn't working, or I'm not able to get my subsidies. And so through that, I, expressed this interest of like, hey, I'm going to med school. I kind of want to work on this. And so they allowed me to kind of work on a sub team that was involved with speaking with the governors and whatnot, and in expanding Medicaid in this in certain states. And so I got to see behind the scenes, kind of look at, what that looked like, who was involved, what the aides did, what the power of the constituency was, and that when you actually write a letter or send an email to your governor or the president, it actually matters and it gets tallied up. And if one side gets 100 messages and the other side gets 10 messages, they're going to act on that. And so I learned all of these things that, if I was maybe unlucky, I could have spent 10 years in politics and maybe I would have gotten it. But in this short amount of time, in this, it was about 8 months, I got to experience that and see those things. And then I feel like I learned a lot of lessons that then I applied at Oklahoma State and residency and now, of course, as well.
Yeah, and you make a good point, and I definitely do not have the advocacy background that you have as far as some of the interests of policy. But a lot of times that I talk to people, and they're like, "Well, this email or this letter, it doesn't make a difference because it's just going to go into a pile or into the garbage." But the fact that there are people who are there who are screening them and going, "Oh, we're seeing this over and over again, and maybe this is something that needs to get to the next level." And I think that's important for people to remember that, like, your letter may be number 100 that gets it to something initially to the president's desk or to the governor's desk or wherever you're looking to get it to. It's such an interesting story to start off. So obviously, as you continued on, health advocacy was obviously a big part of your education and your career. How did you mold advocacy and health policy into your training to where that it was part of what you did, pretty much? I feel like, and I say this now you're a practicing physician, although I will have to say, digress, I did have to chuckle a little bit on one of your videos where someone called you a 12-year-old. You're like, that is a great honor.
Yeah, once you're over 30, that's like the greatest compliment you can get. So I think a lot of people, they maybe use it as an insult or to make fun of me, but I'm like, oh, that's amazing. Things are going well.
Yeah, thank you. It's like all these days in the emergency department aren't wearing on me. Nice. How did you work to mold that into kind of your day-to-day and your training at throughout medical school and residency?
Yeah, so I think it started on a personal level. So I think during the second year of medical school, so before the ACA Affordable Care Act, we had no health insurance. So I, came from, very kind of average family. Going to the doctor was like a big deal. You had to be really, really sick, that kind of thing. We didn't have health insurance. And then when the ACA got implemented, my family was able to get health insurance. And so I saw the power of something that happened in a city hundreds of miles away, thousands of miles away in DC, impacting my family in a positive way. And it really kind of became materialized the second year of med school when my dad had a heart attack, a massive heart attack. He had a STEMI. Thankfully, he had health insurance. He was able to get a CABG. He's healthy, alive, well with us today. But I realized, hey, what if this had happened 2 years before? Would he have been able to get that care? What if he was able to get that care? What would the quality of that care have been? And so it really was kind of like a wake-up call to me in that policy can affect and impact someone's life in a very positive way. But on the flip side, if you don't provide access to healthcare or certain things, it could also have been a very negative experience for myself and my family. And unfortunately, it is a lot of negative experience for a lot of people today. And so that kind of, you know, materialized for me that policy and people's lives go hand in hand. And if I have the ability to mold that policy in some way, that's a duty for us. And so as physicians, and currently, you know, as an emergency medicine physician, I'm at the front door of the healthcare system. I get to see, you know, both in residency and now all the problems that filter through, kind of the raw issues that we are seeing in our communities. And I am kind of the eyes and ears of what's happening. And I have to, I feel like it's a duty to share that, whether it's on social media, whether it's talking to my representatives, whether it's talking to the AOA, all of these various organizations, sharing those things. And that's where that kind of wanting to weave in policy comes from. And so I obviously have some policy background. And so I know that, hey, calling your representative matters. Wearing a white coat and showing up to Austin or DC matters. They're going to listen. They're not going to ignore that. They're not going to, you know, it's facts. When we are physicians and we want to meet with a rep, they value our opinion, you know, more than if a patient came up to them and said, hey, I have no health insurance, right or wrong. They value that because they don't want you going on the local news or on social media and saying something, you know, bad about them, or saying that, hey, this representative is not receptive to me. And so what we say matters. And I think we have to use that to then, you know, report what is happening in our clinics and in our hospitals and try to make things better. And so I think for me, the advocacy side of things, you can't do medicine without advocacy. It has to be a part of it. Now, you don't have to spend, you know, 10 hours, 5 hours a week doing it, but you have to do it to some extent, because I think it's our duty.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. I feel like the way you present that, it's not that it's advocacy for us as physicians. We've been honored. We've been blessed to be able to go to med school, to be able to take care of those people that we are allowed to be taken care of. Of course, I've had the honor of taking care of children, some people's most precious, you know, they're the most precious thing in their lives. And it's been a great honor over the career. But our advocacy is towards our patient. And, you know, in our current environment, social advocacy is so sometimes hostile, and it's caustic. It's difficult to, you know, many times you put your opinion out there and you expose yourself. How do you handle, or how do you try to buffer that in your advocacy from a social media point of view?
Yeah, it is difficult. And, you know, honestly, you will, no matter what you post, there's going to be someone who disagrees with you or think you have an agenda that is coming from a bad place. And they may say that. But I think for me, it always comes down to my training, the science, and then the patients. And that you kind of alluded to it. It's always about the patients. And so sharing those stories, obviously de-identified in a HIPAA compliant way, but sharing those stories is what lets the people receiving those stories let their guard down and really focus on that. Because no one, if I talk about a baby that couldn't get the care that they needed because of a certain reason and them having a bad outcome because of that, no one's going to attack that, right? If I try to sit on a pedestal and try to lecture people, that's a different story. And I try not to do that. And we shouldn't try to do that. Everyone has their own perspective. They got to that perspective because of a certain reason. And so we have to meet them where they are. But the main thing is sharing the stories and the facts that we're seeing, connecting that to our training and experience and facts. And I think sticking in that lane allows for the minimizing of attacks or people, you know, saying that, hey, you're doing this because you're getting paid by this person or that person, and some of the kind of nasty things that are out there. Will they ever be zero? Unfortunately not. That's just the nature of our society. But you can stay away, I think, from like 90 or 95% of some of the bad stories you may hear about, you know, social media folks going out there and posting something and having a bad experience, by really focusing on the patient story, the science, and making it about those things. And I think for the most part, you'll have a positive to at least neutral reaction from the people that see the content you put out there.
When you know, I've always said that, and at least I've learned over my career, patients really don't care what I think, because everybody has an opinion. Everybody has an opinion. And we've seen it over and over again. People don't really care what I think. They care what I know. And when I, and as physicians, we have that ability to know. We can write for the test, we can, you know, or the exam or whatever, and we can actually know what's going on with their patients and really help them out. And it helps squelch them. But when it comes to sometimes, you know, politics and medicine crisscross over many lines. It depends on the administration. It depends on who's could be at the leading health organizations like the CDC or the ACIP. How do you navigate those waters when when you really feel that what the patient is being exposed to, for the most part, is really confusing to them. I mean, they're confused as it is, you know, they find themselves very confused as it is. And then when we have kind of the administration or the people that are in charge confuse them more, how do you handle that from a social media aspect?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think never attacking any individual, right? Like, that does no good to anyone. So never, you know, going after this person or claiming that they are saying something because of this or that. Always coming back to what I've found, especially over the last, you know, couple months and whatnot, where things have been confusing, is coming back to my societies, right? So, hey, something comes down. What is the American College of Emergency Physicians saying about this? If they're not saying anything about it, I have contacts that I reach out to them and be like, hey, what is our stance on this? Have we put out a statement? Do we agree with this? Do we not agree with this? AOA is doing the same thing. Every single, you know, specialty organization is doing the same thing. So relying on them to say, hey, what are we doing about this? Is this on our radar? Eventually, they all come up with some type of, you know, response or agreement or disagreement. And then using that as the backbone, because you never want to go out there alone and attack someone. And, you know, maybe you don't know all the information, or maybe you don't have the support. But when your organization or, you know, this family that you're a part of essentially says, yeah, this is our stance, you can then use that with confidence and say, hey, this organization stance that's been around for 3 decades, 50 years, 80 years, 100 years. And this is where that position's coming from. And we disagree with, you know, something that may be on the news or something that may be in a report. And so I think for me, really relying on those connections you have with those organizations and not trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel. Sometimes it may be something as simple as, you know, maybe it's not even you posting something, you know, as a video, but you reposting something that AAP posted or something along those lines, right? You're still putting out that good information, but you're not, you know, maybe putting yourself out there as much. And not all of us have to go on video and say stuff and whatnot. If you're comfortable, do it. If not, it may be a story repost. It may be a retweet. But I think coming back to those organizations, because they're you know, still very grounded in the science and decades of good studies and experience, and then using that as a launching off point to share good information out there.
Yeah. And, you know, you bring up a point about, like, not going on an attack and relying on your organizations. I think one of the things that I will admit, even I struggle with a lot, and especially as a pediatrician, I mean, we're on a pediatrics podcast here, we're a pediatrics group, is there's just so much that people are asking, do you have a stance on? Whether it's, you know, especially around, like, the vaccine schedule right now, and, you know, all of the other issues of facing pediatric healthcare. When we talk about education, because education is part of public health, we won't necessarily get into the talk about guns right now. That's a hot topic right now, but, like, you know, gun health, mental health, there's so many areas. How do you focus and not get stuck into kind of, like, I mean, you could really get stuck into just this kind of tornado of, I need to respond to this, need to respond to that, need to respond to this. And how do you choose which one? You're like, okay, this is one that I'm going to try to hone in on and try to get my listeners or my followers to care about or to get informed about even.
Yeah. So we're all experts in something, right? Even if you're a pediatrician, maybe you focus on kind of your passions, mental health when it comes to teenagers and helping them navigate the social media landscape. Maybe it is you focus on younger kids and vaccinations, and that's a passion of yours, and you've seen the positive good it can do, and you've been on a mission trip to maybe a country where they didn't have vaccinations, and then you helped kind of increase those, and you saw the positive that came out of it. So I always say focusing on what you are passionate about and know best about, and then really just kind of sticking to that. Because like you said, if you try to respond to every single thing, you're just not going to have the capacity. You're going to get frustrated. You're going to get burnt out. You're not going to be up to date on all of these various issues that are happening. And the last thing you want to do is say something that is outdated or maybe not based in guidance, because you're just trying to respond to like 20 different things, and then you lose your credibility. And so finding, you know, what is your day-to-day? What's the thing that kind of gets you up in the morning that maybe wanted you to go into med school or pediatrics or pediatric mental health or whatever area that like excites you the most during the day, and focusing on that. Because the truth is, you know, unfortunately, a lot of issues are happening in healthcare that are not so good and in pediatrics that are not so good. So there's a lot to choose from. And there's probably going to be something that you feel angry about or frustrated by or excited by, and really just focusing on that. Because you're not trying to be, you know, a podcaster with 100 million followers trying to give your hot take on every single issue. That's not our job. Our job is to rely on our expertise, the things that we're passionate about, and then once again, connecting those to true stories and science and talking about that.
You don't know, 100 million may not be our goal. I mean, right now we're aiming for 100, but you know, 100 million might be our goal. We'll never get there, but it's okay. Scott, you can go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you really struck a real chord with something that you just said, and I want our listeners to be sure and understand what he just said, and that was, you are the subject matter expert, and that is by far, hands down, with no argument in my book, as a physician, and even we just had medical student research day this past weekend at Burrell, and we had nearly 50 posters put up by the medical students, and there was an enormous amount of research that was going on these posters, and every time I listened to one of the students, I mean, they look at me like, oh, Dr. Cyrus, you've been at this for, you know, over 30 years. You know everything about everything. And it's like, no, I don't. I am not the subject matter expert about your poster. You, as a medical student, are that subject matter expert. And I really tried to focus that this is the crux of our argument. Many times I think that the physician thinks, oh, I'm not current on the event, or I'm not, you know, I don't know this or that. But yet we advise our patients every day of their lives to, you know, the best that we know. And that's why, you know, it's lifelong learning in our world. How do you see, or how do you advise somebody that is in a very busy practice and, you know, they just feel like they're, you know, underwater most of the time? How do you advise them to reach out from a social media standpoint to their legislator, to be it state or be it local, be it national? How do you reach out to the different groups that can help support ideas that they're focused on to help their patients, be it pediatrics or adults?
Yeah, so I think similar to all of us have been to advocacy days, right? And usually you go to an advocacy day at a hill and they have like one or two topics you're advocating for. Obviously, with healthcare, there's a million topics we could be talking about, but we don't talk about those. And so I think once again, focusing on what you're passionate about and then seeing what your organization is doing about those. Are they advocacy issues they're focusing on? If they are, do they have, you know, a social media campaign around it? Usually organizations will have some type of social media campaign around, you know, most topics. I love technology. Every major medical organization has something about AI and technology and the role of the specialty in medicine. What are we doing around that? Using those points to then kind of amplify that message. It may be something about vaccines. It may be something about access to care and health insurance. Whatever the thing is, finding once again what your association or group is doing about it. And then how does, say it is something that maybe there is no pre-built campaign around or whatnot, you know, you could suggest that to them. and maybe they create graphics for you. Maybe they create like IG story templates for you. I'm part of this kind of social media organization with a bunch of docs across different specialties, where each month we talk about an issue that we think maybe needs to be amplified, and we all create a video using a similar template. And then we encourage others to create a video using that similar template, and we tag our representatives in those. And so if you are the, person who handles the social media for a representative, and you see these tags on this issue, similar to that mail story where we started, right? If you get 100 letters versus 10, it's so social media is the same. That social media person for them is going to be like, hey, we're getting a ton of tags and messages and DMs about this issue. They're going to bring it up to their chief of staff, who's going to bring it up to a representative, and it's going to get some type of attention. And once again, social media basically is the evolution of that old school sending the mail in and then eventually emails. So it's basically that transition. And so you doing that on that level, finding a group of like-minded folks that are passionate about that, creating a targeted campaign, tagging your representatives, it's gonna get some eyeballs on it and some type of attention.
I feel like you just sent one of those today. I feel like I saw one on your story today about Doc Influencer.
So that was the group I was referring to. So they choose the topic, and last month it was about health insurance companies and some thoughts about that. This month it's about vaccines, and who knows what it'll be about next month.
You find that the social media posts like that, the videos and such, are better received than just a letter that's in the email? What do you see as the best way to approach those situations?
So I mean, I think you should still do the email thing, right? Like, it's really quick. It takes like 10 seconds. They're pre-filled out forms and whatnot. The nice thing about social media is it's in the word, right? Social. You can encourage other people to create a similar video, or at a minimum share your video. And the nice thing is I like to say, and this isn't original, I heard it somewhere else, but it's basically not, it is social media, but it's also interest media. And so all these algorithms, whether it's Instagram or Twitter or Threads or whatever the case may be, they operate where they will show your content to like 50%, maybe, I'm just making this number up, of your followers, and then another 50% to people who have like no affiliation with you. And if your content does well with the 50% that has no affiliation with you, they'll show it to more of those and more of those. And so you could have an account that has 10 followers, and you post a video that resonates and that's good content and that gets shared and gets some traction amongst the non-followers, and you could get thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of views on that. And so I think that's the thing that's really powerful about social media is if you talk about an issue that resonates with people, it has the potential versus, you sending an email and a letter and maybe telling your friends to do it, to have millions and hundreds of thousands of impressions that can then really get that magnifying glass from the representative or the city's office or the governor's office on an issue that you're passionate about.
You kind of walked right into one of my next questions when you were talking about social media. Is one of the biggest things, I mean, I have maybe 50 followers on my halfway dormant Instagram account because I forget, I post pictures of my corgi on it. But we do have like, so the ACOP, we have our social media accounts. One, how did you expect that one day that you would have tens of thousands of followers? And what does it feel like knowing that you have a platform like that, to know that when you do put out work, tens of thousands of people are going to be seeing it?
Yeah, so I never expected I would have any type of following. I just had made all these accounts for, just follow up with friends, family, that kind of thing. Through the pandemic, I got involved with, like, as you had alluded to in the intro, with like traditional media a whole bunch, right? And I've remained involved with traditional media afterwards, but they usually will reach out to you when there's like some type of emergency, right? So maybe there's like a hurricane that hits Houston and there's no power and a bunch of people are getting dehydrated and heat stroke. Like, they'll reach out to you when that's in the news, or when there's a measles outbreak, or usually there's something bad happening and they want you to come and explain it and talk about it, which is totally fine. That's their job. But the thing that's not fun or was frustrating for me was I couldn't talk about, I would have these contacts at all these networks and be like, hey, can we talk about, boarding in their emergency department? Can we talk about how if Medicaid gets cut, this is going to happen, and some of these ER wait times are going to get longer and whatnot? And that's not like fun or emergency enough for them to like dedicate a new segment to. But there are issues that impact people's lives as much as like when things are going south during a hurricane or a natural disaster or a pandemic. And so that's why I turned to social media, because you don't need anyone's permission to talk about a certain issue that you're seeing or want to talk about. And when you post about it, people will comment or share or message you saying, hey, that's something that I've been frustrated with too, or thanks for talking about this, or hey, I'm on this committee that is kind of dealing with this. Would you like to be a member of this or be put on the email newsletter? And so the thing that really attracted me to, you know, dedicating time to social media is I can talk about the things that are exciting to me, that I'm maybe frustrated with, that I think need more light shed on them, and put it out there. And I don't need anyone's permission to do it. And if you do it enough times, eventually you'll find your audience of people. And, you know, I've as you mentioned, I have a few thousand followers, but there's people with hundreds of thousands of followers. We all know Dr. Mike, he's got millions of followers. And so the sky's the limit, but you got to start somewhere. And I like I kind of said, it's not about the numbers. You can look at any large influencer, go to their, you know, reels, and some of their videos will have 20 or 30,000 views, even though they may have a million followers. And that's because it's about the quality of the content now and how these algorithms have shifted. And so I think it's an exciting time because everyone's on an equal playing field. And so you joked about your account with, you know, 50 followers, but you could put out a piece of content and it could get, you know, wide reach if it's good content, if it resonates with people, if it's a message that they feel excited by or it lights something up in them. Versus a large, you know, large platform where they may post something and maybe, you know, something generic, or maybe they're just posting just for the sake of posting and it may not do so well. So I think social media is more democratized now than it was maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
You mentioned social media, and Scott, you just unmuted, so you have a question. I mean, if any of your connections ever need a neonatologist to talk, my goal, my lifetime goal, is to end up on the Rachel Maddow show. I don't think it'll ever happen, but if she ever comes to talk to me, you just let me know, okay?
Hey, 100%. I have that's my other kind of thing I always talk about is, you know, I've gotten invited to talk about, you know, certain things that I have zero business talking about, and I'll say, hey, you know, I don't feel comfortable talking about this. Like, you know, it'll be like some new breast cancer drug that gets approved, right? I'll be like, I know nothing about this. I'm sure I could read up about it and, you know, weld my way through a 5-minute segment, but I actually really know a breast cancer specialist that would do a really good job. And I've been like, hey, if you want to talk to them, and give them names. So you're going to be in the back of my mind. And if anything neonatology and baby related is on the news, I'll make sure I reach out to you.
There you go. Scott, you can ask your question. I just need to have my shameless plug for myself.
I know you well enough to say one of the traits of many physicians is because they're busy, because their time is precious. When people reach out to them, they have a tendency to say no. Would you step on to this segment or that segment, or would you be willing to advocate for this or that, or whatever the platform is? And they just said, you know, I just don't have time. You know, I think that what I hear from you is that you don't say no. I mean, you, my wife says, you know, I need to practice no more often, but it doesn't happen. I do a monthly segment on, I did it just this morning on the CBS affiliate in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And Leanne and I are talking, you know, this month is about infant mortality. How do you get your message across to the physician, to the resident, even the medical student that wants to make feel like they are the imposter. They're not the expert at the subject matter, but they really truly are. How do you get your message across to them to encourage them to step up to the base, if you will, and advocate for their patients?
Yeah. So what, like you said, they are the expert. And I think a lot of times, in the medical world, when you think of an expert, you, no matter who you are, right? When I'm in the ER, I'm a board certified emergency medicine physician. But when I call a neurosurgeon or a cardiologist, I'm like, man, I better get this story straight. I don't want them to think lesser of me or say, hey, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So there's always this hierarchy of, like, if you're a med student, you don't want to look bad in front of the resident. When you're a resident, you don't want to look bad in front of the fellow. It just keeps going. And then we call it imposter syndrome or whatever. But even when you're an attending, it sometimes happens. And so I think it's taking that perspective out of it and saying, you're not talking to someone quiz you're attending, or you're not presenting to that really intense ICU attending. You are talking to the general public who, to them, even a pre-med is an expert, right? Like the general public has a fraction of the knowledge about how a virus replicates, or the role of vaccines, or, you know, what the importance of early childhood education is, all of those things. You may not be a true expert in the sense, like, you probably couldn't do a PhD dissertation. Your attending maybe thinks you should get better at this or that. But when it comes to speaking to the general public who wants good information, you have that source of good information. And so that's number one. Number two, the saying, yes, enough times, and us being busy and it being difficult to find time. Obviously, don't do it if you feel burnt out, or if you've got to, you know, finish a late shift and then pick up your kid. There are some things that do take priority, but also we all do have some time, right? So you look at a lot of the, you know, if you look at social media 10 years ago, it was very polished, very aesthetic, really everything had to be perfect. We're not like that anymore. If you look at some of the best social media physicians out there that are, you know, have massive followings, that are putting out good information, most of their content's, honestly, they're in the car, they're after shift, they hold up their phone and talk to it, and, you know, just really raw experiences. There's a emergency medicine physician I follow who I love, and he literally, like, after the shift, like, put his phone in, like, the little holster in his car, and he's driving home looking at the road and just talk about his shift and some of the things that frustrated him. And so it doesn't have to be something that, you know, you get your ring light on for and get your hair and makeup done. Like, sure, you can do that, but it could also be literally you're walking your dog, you're just talking to the camera, just very raw stuff. Because once again, the public isn't tuning in because you're good looking or you're really polished or you have the amazing home studio. They're tuning in because to them, you're that expert. And you're giving them insight into something they want information about or they're confused about. And so focusing on that information that you're giving them, that's going to get you the traction that you're probably looking for.
Yeah, there might be a lot of people turning into Dr. Mike because he's good looking. I think that's how he got to start.
he might be the one exception to it. But
Dr. Mike.
I love Dr. Mike because so many physicians, you know, like those doctor TV shows and talk shows, a lot of those folks sold out, right? They had those supplement commercials, but I will give it to Dr. Mike. He could have cashed in and done so many things, but he is not. He brings it back to science. He quotes papers. He's done podcasts where he'll bring in, you know, these wellness influencers, and he'll bring in a board certified neurosurgeon or cardiologist to kind of help him do that interview. So he's a very humble person for someone who has a very massive following. And so I know a lot of people, like, you know, may say, oh, he got the following because he was good looking. He probably got some traction because of that. But he's really kept it based on the science and hasn't sold supplements or this protein powder or that thing where it gets cringy and it can get dangerous.
And also a DO. So Dr. Mike, if you're listening and you want to come on our humble podcast, we will welcome you. I do have to say, as an aside, when you talk about getting the hair done, you have a very distinct hairstyle. I don't know if I've seen it change over the years that I've watched. So I applaud you on being able to manage that. I did have a question, and it has fled my mind because we got sidetracked. There it is. One of the things that you mentioned, and you said it when you were kind of describing how you talk about your posts, about when you get on, you say, I'm Dr. Duran, I'm a board certified emergency medicine physician. A lot of things that I've had people ask me questions about, and there's a lot of questions about, and you see it in the media about, like, so-and-so getting fired because they said this, or so-and-so getting, you know, they got kicked out of school because they were caught doing this. How do you protect yourself as far as, like, you know, your institution? Obviously, you're in Texas, I'm in Ohio. There's obviously going to be, there are some opinions of our states that may not match science. So how do you protect yourself, and how can other people protect themselves when they do want to get online and they are passionate about something, but they want to make sure that they show that, like, this is them, and protect them from repercussions from institutions?
Yeah. So a few things, obviously we know all about HIPAA protection. So never, you know, putting out any patient information out there or anything like that. I personally never used my hospital's name, whether it was in residency or even currently. A lot of times when I go on the news, they'll ask like, hey, what hospital are you from? I'll be like, nope, we're leaving that out. I'm an emergency medicine physician in Houston. That's all that I want you to kind of refer me to by. The kind of funny story is, so during how I got onto the news was, I'll kind of give you the quick version. I was a second year emergency medicine resident, went to an emergency medicine conference in New York City, late February 2020. We come back, I'm working the shift the next day, turn to my colleagues, say, it's kind of cold in here. I put on a jacket, fast forward 4 hours, I mean, it feels like a 104 fever, chills. And myself and the two co-residents who had gone to New York were the first three confirmed positive cases of COVID in San Antonio at that time. So that's my original claim to fame. But so back then it was like, is it a 14-day quarantine? But you guys are healthcare workers, so let's just make it 21 just to be extra safe. And so I'm going crazy in my apartment and I started tweeting like just really, you know, basic stuff, right? Like if you're washing your hands, you should do it for this many seconds. If you are have a fever, you could take these two medications, but you probably shouldn't take Motrin if you have these medical, like just really basic stuff. And some news producers saw that and were like, hey, you want to come on the news and talk about some of this stuff? I said, sure. And so that snowballed into like a bunch of news appearances. So like fast forward 3 months, by this time I've probably been on like, I don't know, like in 30 to 50 news heads. I come back from an overnight shift. So I never asked permission from my residency about this, right? I come back from an overnight shift. I go to sleep, wake up around like 1 or 2 p.m. I have like 10 text messages, voicemails from my PD, all types of stuff. And what had happened was MSNBC was coming to San Antonio to film the hit. And I guess the team that was coming didn't have my email. Like I'd been in touch with someone else. So they just called the hospital and they're like, hey, can Dr. Durrani like filmed an interview outside this hospital. They're like, why him, right? Why are you wanting the second year resident? And that kind of opened the door to like, oh, this guy's been doing a lot of interviews. So thankfully I didn't get fired or nothing bad happened. But our agreement at the end of that was between my PD and I, like leave the hospital and everything's name out of it. You do your own thing. And they were really understanding and really cool about it. But since then, that was kind of a crash course. And like, you're not representing the hospital. You're not representing, you know, any organization, you're speaking for yourself. It's never medical advice, never include any HIPAA information or anything like that. And you know, should stray away from most trouble. Now, of course, there is, like you kind of mentioned, some of the states we're in, some of their, you know, official policies may be different than even our medical organizations and specialties. And so that's why I do mention those, you know, sticking to what your society is talking about and what their guidelines are, because a hospital or a boss or whatnot, they're more than likely not going to, you know, get you in trouble or be mad at you as long as you're following the official kind of policies of that organization, of your specialty and whatnot. But, you know, I'm not going to say there's zero risk. We are in interesting times. We're seeing people, you know, getting in trouble and getting let go for various reasons. So I would say, you know, once again, keeping it focused on the patient, focused on the science, focused on what your societies are talking about, the things that you are an expert at and know best about. And I think that for the most part will keep you out of trouble.
I can't agree more. And one of the things that I find that a lot of physicians, students, residents are concerned about is that they have this idea of, oh, this takes a lot of time. This takes a lot of time out of my day. I'm busy. I don't have time for this. It exposes me. You know, how do you combat those that are, you know, I call them the naysayers, you know, you mentioned it earlier. It's a personal thing. You either feel like you have that capability or you don't, but as we've talked about tonight, most physicians have the capability. They may not realize it. I think they have it. How do you combat those individuals and encourage them to reach out to advocate?
Yeah, well, we definitely have the ability, right? On a busy clinic schedule in a pediatrics clinic, you're in that room for a couple of minutes and you're communicating a lot of information. You're answering a lot of questions. You are doing a lot. That means you are a good communicator. Whatever specialty you're in, or in my specialty, I'm in that room for, you know, I timed it very recently. Honestly, on average, like 3.5 minutes. That's crazy to me, right? I'm in a patient room for 3.5 minutes, and I'm able to get a bunch of information, process that, share with them what I'm going to do, order tests, then come back for another 2 to 3 minutes, explain the results. That means that we all have and are trained to be good at communicating. Social media is communication, and how social media is structured today, obviously we have long form podcasts, which are good, but like when we talk about TikTok or Instagram, those are those 30 to 60 second clips that you want to get high yield information in to tell, you know, the public and patients essentially. And so we're really good at that. And so relying on that and not saying, hey, I'm not trained for this or I'm not good at this. And then also we're not influencers, right? So don't look at influencers and their aesthetics and what their pages look like. We are using these pages for putting out good medical scientific information. And so you need to look to who those role models in that space are. And if you look, they're not, once again, those people who have perfect studio lighting or have hired a videographer. They're people who are creating really good informational content that is, you know, really, really helpful, but it's maybe holding up a camera in a dark room, or maybe it's walking during your lunch break and filming that. And so relying on your communication skills, which you learn throughout medical school and residency, and then adding your expertise to it. And I think that's how I combat the naysayers saying, hey, I don't want to do it. And then once again, you may not be someone who wants to put yourself out there on video, and that's totally fine. There's a bunch of tools out there where you can say, you know, grab your voice notes app and say, hey, this is what I saw in clinic today. I think there's this misconception about this thing. I want to share this. Put that in ChatGPT and say, hey, make a little kind of refined version of this. Go to an app like Canva where you can make nice graphics and Instagram square kind of grid posts. Post text out there. It doesn't have to be video. If you don't want to do that, you can once again go to your societies or American Medical Association or AOA's things and see, hey, what are they posting about? Let me amplify this. Let me reshare this. Let me post this on my stories. You might have a friend or family member who never knew about that thing or is confused about it. And they can then click on the AOA's stuff or the AAP stuff and go to their websites. But you could be that conduit to creating that link of like, oh, this is a reliable source of information because my cousin Sally, who is a board certified pediatrician, shared it, and I'm going to go to that website and share it and rely on this information. So there's different levels of it. Everyone doesn't need to, you know, create a fancy reel or a TikTok. You can do it many, many different ways.
You bring up a great point. When AAP actually went against the ACIP just recently, you know, a lot of pediatricians were like, yes, I mean, we've got to stand up for the science, and we've got to stop the rhetoric of just anecdotal stories. And we have, because it's not for us, it's for our patients. And it's so important that we, as the medical science, you know, I was listening to one of the talk radio show hosts, and it's just like, well, everybody's got an opinion, but you're not a doctor. And it's just like, I'd love for you to get a pediatrician on that show, because you're going to say the science is behind what we have said for many, many years about the flu vaccine, about different vaccines and these preventable vaccines. And we've all seen our politicians and those that are kind of over our different departments of health vacillate in with their opinion. When we had the measles outbreak, it was like, well, the measles vaccine we can use vitamin A, you know, and you're like going, oh my God, please don't spread that. And then we have people dying from vaccine preventable diseases. And finally, it's just like, maybe we need to try the vaccine.
Yeah.
I love what the CDC came out and said. We need to remove all thimerosal from vaccines, from childhood vaccines. I have not given, as a pediatrician, in the last 20 years, a thimerosal containing vaccine. That's how long ago thimerosal has been removed from our vaccines. But the general public doesn't know that. And we, as physicians, I really, truly feel we've got to stand up for those issues when they are out there in the public.
Yeah, 100%. I agree, because we have a duty to our patients, like we've talked about numerous times. And I feel personally, right, this is my opinion, that if I'm not speaking about these things that I'm seeing, I am letting go of that duty, right? And bad stuff's going to happen. People are going to end up in my ER and ERs all across the country because we didn't speak up about it. Now, if we speak about it and it still happens, at least we did what we knew. We shared it and it still happened. But we can't say, hey, we were all scared in a corner while this all happened. And it happened. And oh boy, I wish we would have done something about it. And so I do love that these organizations are, once again, putting out good communication, good science-backed studies and things out there, and empowering us as clinicians to be able to use those things to, once again, talk about them, amplify those messages, and, you know, hopefully prevent bad outcomes.
Sorry, I had a train of thought. Oh, there we go. One of the things that we talked about, you had mentioned about, like, you know, the time and things that gets put into it. Just for our listeners, because you do have a pretty consistent social media presence. I would say at least a couple times a day, I get some sort of alert from your account. Walk our listeners through, like, what your typical day is and how much time that you spend. Because I'll be honest, one of the things that I have trouble with is, like, I have my clinical duties and I have my office duties, and I also want to read the Washington Post and the New York Times, and I want to see these headlines and see what's going on, look at, you know, all of the different television news. And then I realize, oh, I haven't done this part or this part of my other academic duties. So walk us through kind of like what your typical day is and how you balance your time versus, you know, of watching the headlines, scanning through the news stations, and doing your clinical work and the rest of the stuff that you have to do as a physician.
Yeah, so I'm emergency medicine, so I work about, you know, 12 or 13, 10-hour shifts a month, and obviously they're all over the place. They change from nights to days to evenings to afternoons. When it comes to following health updates and news, there's probably a list of like 7 or 10 reporters that I follow on Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, that I'll kind of scroll through their favorited, and I'll kind of scroll through their feeds at some point in the day just to see, hey, what has happened in the world of healthcare? Did we get some new policy? Did something controversial happen and whatnot? So that's how I kind of keep on top of that. In terms of creating the social media content, obviously for me, I take it probably, you know, more seriously than, you know, the average physician would. And so And the reason for that is, once again, I feel like it is a duty it should be for all of us to create good content that combats a lot of the bad information out there, because there is so much bad information out there, especially now. And so how I do that to be efficient about it is I'll literally sit down and say, hey, these are the things I've been wanting to talk about for the last few days, and fill them all in the span of like a 20 or 30 minute period, right? Just these quick clips and whatnot. And then whenever I have time during the day, whether it's waiting in traffic or waiting at the grocery store in line, or maybe it's an overnight shift and I've got some time between patients and it's at a freestanding ER and it's not crazy, I'll edit those and add captions and kind of, you know, work on them and then post them throughout the week. And so that's how I'm able to kind of consistently put out things, rather than, you know, it'd be very difficult to kind of try to film every, like, wake up and be like, hey, I came off an overnight shift, I'm working overnight again, but I got to film today's video. That would be impossible. And so having some type of theme and schedule to it, and then knowing the things I want to talk about, right? So I have a huge passion for health technology and how it impacts, you know, our specialties and medicine and AI and things of those. And so I want to at least look at what's happening in that world. And if there's some news, creating a video around that. Creating something around emergency medicine themed, because people are very frustrated when they go to the ER. That's my general experience. Obviously, they're going through a very difficult time, but they may be frustrated by the wait time or not getting results quickly or not being able to, you know, someone told them go to the ER to get an MRI. And it's like, hey, sorry, we can't do that here. And so there's a constant list of things in the ER world that I'll create something around. And then, of course, anything I see on the news, creating content around that. And so I kind of bucket it into like health tech stuff, news / current events that I have thoughts on or want to clarify things on, emergency medicine kind of bucket, and then the STEM bucket as well. I try to post about something STEM related at least once a week as well, just because obviously that is something that is a passion of mine, and I do have some. I went to the National STEM Festival. I'm like a ambassador for them, and so I do have some like high school and middle age audience members that really get excited by that content. So yeah.
We haven't even touched that yet. Oh, I'm so remiss as a podcast host. Tell us about your show, STEM City. How that came to be, and like where people can find it, what its basis is.
Yeah, so it came from the reason I wanted to make the show is I selfishly wanted to look at cool science topics and things and see the behind the scenes of that, whether it's NASA or the Blue Angels or electric vehicles, whatever the case may be. Like getting a behind the scenes look at those things is cool, so that would be awesome. But then also I feel like it's like medical school, right? Like you have no idea what the possibility of all the specialties are. A lot of times you have to choose which residency you're going to apply to without having gone through all your rotations. And like, man, I wonder if I'm going to like OB, but I don't have that rotation till the end of the year. And maybe I should just like focus on this specialty and apply to this or things of that nature. And that exists in the science world too, right? Like when you're a kid in high school or college, like you have no idea what the careers that out there exist are. And so it came from that, those two things, like, hey, let me showcase some STEM careers that exist in things that young people are excited by. And so finding those things, finding the STEM careers that exist in those places, and STEM careers exist everywhere. And then I pitched that to PBS actually at first, and they were like, well, we don't have the capacity for it now, but PBS Austin had a contact in Houston with KPRC, which is the NBC affiliate. And they're like, well, no, they've been looking for some content. Maybe that'll be a good home for it. And they were. And so thankfully it worked out. And so it's a once a month kind of thing. If you're not in Houston, you can STEM City KPRC. If you search that up, it's got its own dedicated page on their website. They also post it on YouTube. So if you type in STEM City KPRC, the episodes will pop up there as well. And it's basically, it's so much fun. I find something that I've been curious about, and usually I reach out to them, and when they see that you're with a local station, they usually say yes, and I come up with all the questions. They send a videographer with me, and we kind of make an episode out of it. And the coolest thing, of course, I'll kind of bring this up, is flying in an F-18 fighter jet with the Blue Angels in the back seat. And if you're wondering, yes, I did pass out and I did puke.
Wow, that I gotta say, you kind of live the life that I want to live, minus emergency medicine. That part you can keep that. But the other fun, this that is amazing, all the opportunities that you've been able to cultivate for yourself based off of your just your interest and your passion and your persistence and of getting your foot in those doors. So that's really just an amazing story of how you've been able to build this presence that you have in social media and general media still, because you still pop up on various news stations to this day.
Yeah, I pinch myself every day. I thank God and have achieved a lot of goals and more goals than I even thought I had as goals. And I'm just blessed to get to do a lot of unique and amazing things. And all of it starts with, the medicine side of things. That's the foundation that kind of helped make a lot of these other things happen. So, yeah.
I really truly believe that it is the medicine side of things that give you that. We're blessed to be physicians. We were blessed to have this career, but I really truly believe that we have a duty, and our duty is to our patients, our duty is to our society. And if you do it locally, if you do it, I just yeah. Today they or yesterday they asked me to do how do you do public speaking in as a physician. And it's one of the things is you don't say no when the local newscaster calls and says, hey, we have a story of a local city that has nitrates in their water. Can you talk about nitrates in the water? Now, am I an expert at nitrates in the water? No, but can I look it up on the online and refresh my memory and refresh what I do know? Kind of rejazz the case space, as I like to say. You can do that. You don't have to be. You're not an imposter. You are the expert about what about the different knowledges. And so I think your insight to, and I think sometimes they're afraid that it's going to interrupt their day. It's going to interrupt their, I don't know. I couldn't tell you how many times I've had the local news stations come to my office, and they just set up in a room, and I'll go see a patient, and they'll come out. I'll come out and they'll say, "I'm ready for you, Dr. Cyrus." It's like, okay, you put the microphone on, you do the segment, which is all of literally maybe 5 minutes. And you know, you take the microphone off and you walk into the next room and they're like, you know, it's funny because patients many times will ask you what was that all about? It's like, oh, we were talking about, you know, this or that, you know, and they're like, oh, well, tell me more. And so you actually get kind of sidetracked on what they're there to see you, but they're happy that their physician is in the public and as a knowledgeable expert. So it's really a good thing. And I highly encourage everybody, just like you have today, highly encourage the physician to step out. Maybe it's a little bit uncomfortable for them, but the more you do it, the more you have the aspect, I can do this. And like you said, it's a passion of yours. Yeah, it is. It's a passion of mine too. So I thank you for all you do to help your patients and to help get the message out there about healthcare.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me. Hopefully some of what I said was somewhat helpful, and thanks for what both of you all are doing. Congrats on, I believe this is the 50th episode, baby. So congrats on making it to 50. I think I saw a stat somewhere where, like, if you get past episode number 5 on a podcast, you're more likely to get to like number 20. And so obviously y'all have far exceeded that. So I think you all are leading the way as well. You know, it's hard to do 50 episodes. I, you know, have done podcasts on my own as well. And it's a lot of work, a lot of preparation, taking time out of both of y'all's busy schedule. So I commend y'all on doing it yourself. And then obviously having me on, it was truly an honor. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I told Jason when he asked me to join him, I told him that my wife has always said, don't give Scott the microphone.
I agree.
But I really feel I'm passionate about that physician that, as you are, we have the knowledge. We need to share the knowledge. We don't need to be afraid to step out there. And if somebody is out there, you know, trying to disagree with you, it's a normal day. That's what brings to me everybody together, is that those people that are may disagree with you say, but what you say has the science behind it. And that's the important part.
Yes. And, you know, I want to first ask if you have any parting words of wisdom to our listeners, Dr. Durrani, about those who are thinking about becoming a social media health, I don't want to say influencer, a social media health advocate. There we go. About what's the best just first step for someone who's interested in doing this path and what they can do.
Yeah, I would say two things. One, just get started. Don't overthink it. That is the biggest hurdle. Like I mentioned, people get, you know, stuck on the lighting or saying every single word perfectly, or, you know, so many things. Just do it. Obviously, if you're thinking about it, that means you have a message. You've been wanting to say something. Just focus on that message and do it. The second thing is, it's going to take time to get good, right? If you are a physician, you went to residency for years and years and years, and you sucked day one of intern year. And when you were leaving, you're amazing. And we're still all learning, right? We're on this continuing medical education journey. We're never going to get to the end, and we're still trying to get better each and every day. Same thing like social media. You know, your first post or post 5 or post 10 isn't going to be as good as Dr. Mike's. But keep learning. You know, when a piece of content does well, look at what you did different there than other pieces of content and kind of double down on that. When something does bad, you know, whatever, on to the next. But it's not going to, you know, focus on the medicine and science, and eventually you'll find a rhythm. Eventually you'll find what works for you. And it may take, you know, a month or 6 months or a year. And don't compare yourself to, final thing I'll say, other health advocates out there, right? If someone's getting 10,000 or 50,000 views, good for them. But if you're getting 500 views or 100 views, imagine if someone invited you to your community, gathering place and said, "Hey, we want to hear from you," and 100 people were there to listen to you talk about a health topic. How happy would you be? That's 100 humans that watch your piece of content. And yeah, it's not 10,000, it's not 100,000, but that's 150 people. And so, focus on your message, focus on the science, just get started. And even if it changes one person's perspective or gives them more information where they can make a good medical decision for them and their family, that's all that matters.
What a great message. You make a good point. Like it comes down to the person to person, the individual, like if you can make a difference in that person's life. So I want to end on a high note. This episode is going to be aired the day before OMED. We've already heard, unfortunately, Dr. Durrani, you won't be joining us in OMED, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately not this year, but I was there last year and I look forward to being there next year.
Scott, I will be seeing you in Nashville, I am sure.
You bet, you bet. I mean, as the president of the American Osteopathic Foundation, we're going to have a wonderful time at OMED. Our gala is on Friday night. I hope that everybody will be a part of that. We, as a foundation, are the philanthropic arm of the American Osteopathic Association, and we love giving back, just as physicians love giving back their time, their talent, their intelligence to our patients. We love giving back money. My theme for this year is philanthropic excellence, or transforming lives through philanthropic excellence. Or in other words, I love giving away somebody else's money. So it reaches a lot of students, it reaches physicians, researchers. We get to celebrate educators of the year, physicians of the year, lifetime achievement awards. This is a time to show off osteopathic physicians and osteopathic medicine in the profession. So I am proud to be an osteopathic physician, and I look forward to seeing all my fellow osteopathic physicians in Nashville.
Yes, and I will be at the AOF Gala this year because I will be presenting the award for the ACOP AOF Pediatric Resident of the Year. So I won't be black tie, my apologies. I will be black suit with colorful tie because I don't own a tux, but I will be
Then you're going to fit right in. You're going to fit right in.
there. And
No
I won't have
problem.
any cowboy boots. Sorry, so I'm fitted in
As
Nashville.
I say, you got to check your guns at the door, but your horse is welcome.
Dr. Ronnie, I want to thank you for a very lively, very informative, very inspirational talk on this, our 50th anniversary, 50th anniversary, 50th episode. And thank you for all that you do for the osteopathic profession and for the medical profession as a whole with your outreach and your advocacy through social media. We will put in the show notes everywhere that that you can be found. And I'm sure you will probably, I shouldn't say probably, I am sure you will definitely inspire some of our listeners to hopefully follow in some of your footsteps. So thank you for that.
Thanks for those kind words. As Dr. Sauer said, I'm a proud osteopathic physician. I was one of those scholarship recipients in medical school, and so they're a big part of getting to where I am today. Amazing organization. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate you being here, and it's been a I hope an inspiration to those that will listen to this podcast.
All right. Thank you for those of you who are listening and continuing to subscribe and like to our podcast. Keep doing it. It gets us up in the ranks somehow. We got to get there. We will see you again this time next month in October when it will be turning into spooky season and Halloween. So until then, enjoy life, stay safe, and have a great day. The ACOP PEDScast podcast series is the official podcast of the American College of Osteopathic Pediatricians. Your hosts are Jason Jackson Dio and Scott Cyrus Dio, edited by Jason Jackson. Original music by James Cyrus of Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you have any requests for topics or you'd like to be a guest on the PEDScast podcast series,
please email us at PEDSCAST, PEDSCAST, @acopeds.org.